Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Ever since the big game feels like ages ago, the Cincinnati Bengals cannot get in the flow. Now they're not number one despite the name of the show, they became little kittens for Edgar Allan Poe. Our brain John Sheeran knew we'd lose in the fight, which really broke my heart, cause Sheeran's usually right. I don't know what he thinks about the New Orleans Saints, but if he say they're gonna lose, I'm gonna file a complaint with Bridget. Yeah! HR in the house! Electric in the house! Daddy O'McDuke foreclosed on the house! Yeah!
All right. Wow. That was quite...
Let's do it again.
Intro.
That was great. Right.
Thank
that
you.
That was very good.
Thank
that
you.
That was very good. And you're watching the Number One Bengals podcast. You can subscribe on the podcasting networks and podcasts.
Everywhere where you find podcasts, you find this podcast. Yeah.
You can find podcasts on the side of the street. Subscribe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Find podcast what? If a grocery guy, store, subscribe.
Yep. Anywhere if a guy comes to your door and says, I got some podcasts, let him in because he probably has our podcast.
I was going to say, that guy in side of the street, that's where you find us.
Yeah. Yeah, we are side of the street kind of podcast.
John, how are you doing?
I feel like I'm on a podcast that you can find on the street, man. I feel great.
Yeah.
You can get a lot of great deals on the street. And this podcast is a great deal. It's free.
Yeah.
You can make it not free. If you're a good person, you can go to patreon.com/DHSports. We'll talk more about that later. But first, we want to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals because they just played the Sunday night football contest. And, you know,
they really stunk it up.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I would say they were in the game up until the end. They had a couple of really nice drives, John. But the offense stalled for long periods of time. And I think you tweeted, John, that the issue is what the passing on second down or the long kind of passing downs we're not able to generate a lot.
Yeah, you really read that correctly. Early down passing on first and second down, regardless of the distance to gain.
Distance, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's the good teams in the NFL do well on those downs passing the ball. The Bengals, to
do not.
The surprise of no one, are not good, and that's. No. Definitely, in my mind, like at least statistically, the most consistent problem with this team, because even back in week 3 and week 4 against the Jets and Dolphins, when they scored 27 points in those games, they were still inconsistent, if not ineffective, passing on those downs. They got away with a lot of third down success, and that's where the explosive plays for the most part came from. But as we saw in this game, no explosive plays to be had. You continue to just shoot yourself in the foot on early downs and put yourself in situations where you have to convert every third down that's given to you because you can't convert first down on first or second down, you're going to lead to 17-point outings when you probably should be scoring north of 20 points. So it's a huge problem, and I think we all can kind of, you know, determine where like the issues that lead to that problem are. But until it gets solved, like it's going to be hard for this team to compete with the best offenses.
Well, I had the thought while I was watching the game. So the Bengals, I think this was in the third quarter, they committed some sort of foul, and it made it first and 15. And at that time, I was thinking, thank God it's first and 15, because they're not just going to shove the ball into Joe Mixon's heart and make the man run for a yard and get killed. I mean, honestly, why am I dumb? Why not just try passing the ball more?
Well, to answer your question, Bridget won't let me answer that question. Are you dumb? She said, I can't answer that.
No, that's called bullying. No. That's called bullying. It's called
bullying.
Yeah. Bridget. And rhetorical questions have
Bridget is a bully. She's an HR bully. She keeps us in line. That's what she does. But to answer your question, John, it is amazing. You said,
wait a minute.
Good
what
teams
about my
are
question?
Able to get on the first and second down, and the Bengals cannot do that, but you are implying they are still a good team. And that is a kind of a amazing story.
They are a good team. They are a good team solely because of Lou Anarumo. Solely because of the defense was able to contain Lamar when others cannot. Because that defense, honestly, that defense is like a wall that will stand as long as it can until the offense embarrassingly will let that wall leak and fail. And I'm sorry. I love Joe Burrow more than anybody
else.
Once did
I imply that they were still a good team, by the way.
John, yeah. He never said that. But don't put words in his mouth or mine or Bridget's.
Please, we need order in the podcast room. And I would just say this, Hoji, to answer your question.
Yeah.
When they got Joe Mixon going, and I would say after that Von Bell interception, it wasn't just Mixon, the holes. I mean, John, there were some holes on the left side that I hadn't seen all year. There were just some gaping holes. And I don't know what the Ravens were doing wrong or what Joe Mixon was doing right. But it seemed like the blocking was on point, and Mixon had a bit of purpose. He had some inspiration where he was very focused on where he wanted to go for like two drives or so, right?
Yeah, well, what does two drives do for you?
No, I mean, for a while. I mean, he only had 14 carries, but I think most of them were the successful ones are on those two drives, you know? And he had his best game of the season.
5.5 a carry, right?
Like 5.6. And I think Piran was 5.7. So Piran was, again, is still better. But John, yeah, good teams.
Good teams. just because they ran successfully for 14 times doesn't make them a good team. But that looked like what the running game should have been looking like for the past 5 weeks when they've tried to reintegrate some of these shotgun runs to make their offense a little bit less predictable in terms of how teams view them from the pre-snap phase. From what I saw, it didn't seem like the Ravens were crowding the box at all. Like they, I think, had 70% of their plays in two high looks, but they oftentimes disguised those looks. But regardless, they didn't have, seven or eight guys in the box consistently. So those gaps were pretty open from the get-go, and I think the offensive line had by far its best game. Like Joe Burrow talked last week about how that was the most time he ever had in the pocket. This game was even better, and it wasn't for a lack of trying from the Ravens. I think they have solid pass rushers, but they could not stop the Bengals offensive line from getting movement on some of those downs, and it allowed Mixon to have that space to be more of a downhill runner. And I think that the scheme in which like they ran out of shotgun, I think it really fit what Mixon was doing. And yeah, like that just goes to show you, though, why it wasn't so important for the Bengals to get the run game going, for the offense to get going as a result of it. Because as we saw, the offensive line had an amazing game. Joe Mixon had his most efficient game. The offense still scored 17 points. It all relies on Burrow in the passing game right now. And until that gets fixed, the rest of the offense doesn't get fixed either.
To what degree, John, do you think the absence of T. Higgins plays a part in all this?
It did, but you have to wonder if it should in the first place, though. Like, not every offense in the NFL, not every good offense in the NFL has three high-quality receivers. Exactly. Two that are as explosive as Higgins and Chase. You would think that just with Chase and Boyd and Hayden Hurst, who clearly played with the chip on his shoulder, like that would be enough to stretch the field against any defense, regardless if it's the Ravens defense. I do think that my biggest concern with this game was the fact that the Ravens had a new defensive coordinator in Mike McDonald, and they weren't really sure what scheme he was going to run out there. Like, they are used to playing against man coverage and blitz heavy schemes against the Ravens, and the Ravens did anything but that. They played a ton of zone, and they didn't really rush more than four guys, and that's the recipe for success against the Bengals offense right now. And I think that because they didn't have any experience playing against this Ravens team with that scheme, they were going to be looking for answers for most of the game, and that seemed to be the case. But yeah, not having Higgins out there doesn't make the offense better. You would just still expect Jamar Chase and Tyler Boyd to produce and to be asked to stretch the field more than they did.
So, John,
I just have a question about that, because as I was watching some of the plays last night, and I know this is a narrative that people have commented on throughout the season, are there times, or is anyone else feeling like there are times when Burrow is forcing the Burrow to chase connection? Because there were a couple throws where I was like, dude, not your best man. And I felt like he was trying to, like, we know Burrow can throw a dime.
Yeah. I apologize. But actually, that discussion is off limits on the show. I'm sorry about that.
But you've been censored, Bridget. You've been censored.
I refuse to be silenced.
But I will address your Burrow question, which is, you know, why are they limiting Joe Burrow? And this was something that we saw, this tweet today, where he said, there's nothing you can do. There's nothing I can do if they're going to play us like they did today, because basically there is no schemes for me to throw to my players. I can't do anything if they don't let me do anything. And who's they, John?
You setting me up for something?
I just called your name, so.
Yeah, just say it.
I would say this, John. You know, I look at the Ravens, and they don't have any receivers. They don't have any. Everybody say they don't have any receivers. Lamar Jackson, we saw his accuracy, or his lack of accuracy. He missed on about three huge throws, right? One of them was that interception. Two of them were wide open. I don't say wide open. One of them was wide open. One of them was pretty
desperate.
Open.
Yeah.
And I love Lamar Jackson, very good quarterback. But what does that tell you? It tells you that they're scheming the receivers open. They're average receivers, and they're making plays. And you can do that with a Lamar Jackson, who, let's just say, that's Joe Burrow's strength, the accuracy, and it's Lamar Jackson's, let's say, closest thing to a weakness. I still think he's good accuracy-wise, but he's not maybe, you know, Mahomes good or that kind of stuff. But anyways, and then our receivers, I mean, that is the strength of the entire roster, and that is their weakness. And yet, and our secondary is very good, and yet they were constantly getting these little gains in different ways, different routes, different people.
Might I explain? Because, I mean, I feel like maybe I'm the only QB, former QB coach here on this panel. So, Daddy-O, you're completely right. Or no, I'm sorry, Bridget, you're completely right. Yes, Joe is looking for his man, Jamar, a little too often. And you'll notice that when he's not looking for Lamar, he's looking now for Hurst. And the reason for that, in my humble opinion, is because Joe is an intuitive QB. He's not a play-by-the-book QB. This is why Daddy-O's thesis that better play calling would help. It won't help. What he needs is just a little more time with these other guys, play with it. When a QB he knows, like T. Higgins, is gone, it has a huge effect on him because he's an intuitive QB. He knows the way they catch. He knows where to place the ball for them specifically. He's not the Aaron Rodgers type, cerebral type quarterback like Peyton Manning or Aaron Rodgers. He's an intuitive quarterback. And so that's why he does so well with Jamar Chase.
There was one key play where he forced it to
And
Chase.
There's an interception. Yes, Daddy is right. I don't think it's necessarily just always looking at Chase. In this game, there was an emphasis to get the ball in Chase's hands as quick as possible because they were trying to, I think, force the Ravens defense closer to the line so then you can free up some deep shots down the field. And to their credit, whenever they're given a single high look, they almost always go with the vertical route down the sideline to get into that hole shot. With Chase, though, you have to, I mean, imagine if Higgins missed this entire game and Chase only got like four targets. The conversation would be, why did you not feature Chase more in the offense? Instead, he got 12 targets for only 50 yards because, again, they didn't scheme up solid plays to get him down the field. And that is an issue, right? It's almost like they overcorrect a lot to the point where it's just creating a new problem from an already existing problem. And the problem was initially you need to force defenses to respect what you have in the underneath game and the run game, just to force them closer to the line of scrimmage. And now they're doing check down after check down after check down because either A, like they're just telling Burrow to just always go to that after the first couple of seconds to not take a sack, right? Just to get some type of positive yardage. Or B, they're trying to set things up down the field and nothing's coming open. That's a scheme issue. That's a coaching and an execution issue. It's all of those things, but it does seem like it's an overcorrection.
So, John, well,
if I might pick up on that, when they tried to do a weird quote-unquote play-calling situation,
right?
You remember this crazy, really honest...
They empty it out, fourth and goal. Burrow rolls, looks to throw it inside, incomplete. They try to shovel it to...
Yeah, that was a bad. That was a bad play. I was talking about the flea flicker. The flea flicker.
Was horrible. Down. Yeah,
that was so dumb. It was the most important third down maybe of the game. You do a flea flicker.
You know what?
You do a risky kind of stupid play that.
It's not. Wasn't it second risky. Down?
It was a Philly special.
Was it second? But I mean, here's the.
I really disliked that play.
No, I mean,
I think you have an elite QB. It's not an Andy Dalton. You don't need to do flea flickers.
Yeah.
Make your QB do the work.
I would say this. So
the only thing I'll say about that, though, and I know other folks have said this, if that play goes well, everyone is talking about, but like, look, they're creative. Yeah. Like, I didn't hate that play. I mean, it was unfortunate what happened to Tyler Boyd, but I feel like there needs to be, like, yes, the Philly special isn't unique. It's not exciting, but from the offense we've seen this season, it was one of the more exciting moments.
Here's what I want to say to John. But it's not about the creativity. I don't have a problem with that. I don't have the flea flicking, Philly cheesing, whatever play here. I don't have it to show you, but I remember in that play, not only did Boyd get a lot of people in his face, but if you looked at Burrow, who is apparently the target, because he is the cheese of steak in this analogy.
I hate that.
You look at him, he was in the crowd too, John.
It was a horrible play. No, it was a dumb play.
My point is
Joe Burrow is not a receiver. Hold on. Look,
we don't know that. But my point is this. The creative plays, it seems like they're just put in there without a lot of situational awareness about what you're facing. And if you look at this one, if you look at the shovel pass, where was this ball going to go against that defense?
They empty it out, fourth and goal. Burrow rolls, looks to throw it inside.
There's like five guys surrounding, Stanley Morgan or whoever.
Well, it's not supposed to take 4 seconds, and the blocker is not supposed to be in front of Morgan to get in the way of it. It's an execution thing.
It was just a mess. And what I'm saying is,
who's to blame? Who do we hang for this, John? Come on, one person.
We're hanging.
Who's to blame?
We're not hanging anyone.
We're not in the village.
This is the manual.
This is the problem of discourse, man. Football talk analysis has become so bastardized and so just plain stupid.
Sorry, because I meant who do we behead?
Oh, okay, that's better. it's all results based. Like Bridget's right. I think Daddy was right to an extent, man. Like, if these things work, then this is not what we're talking about. But of course, after last week, after the Thursday night game, when they still had clear issues sustaining drives on offense, no one gave a crap because they scored 27 and they had some exciting plays. These issues have persisted all week, all season, I should add. Like, they haven't just gone away. Like, we have to look deeper than just what the actual results are.
John, okay, when a play like that goes bad, is it the offensive coordinator, head coach, quarterback?
It is whoever is calling the plays. And in this situation, Zach Taylor is spreading out the blame. He's saying we all called the plays together.
Daniel, it's bigger than that, right? It's not just calling that play in that situation. It's actually, how do they practice that play, right? What do they see?
That's true.
Yeah.
But I'm saying there's a feel. I think the best play callers, if you look at the Andy Reid, right? He has like an encyclopedia of plays. But it's not just about having all those plays. It's about having a feel for the game and what you're seeing on the defense.
Okay. And who's responsible for generating that feel, Daddy-O?
That was my question. Feel,
that appears that if that voice is Zach Taylor, he's the final say on generating that feel.
Well, of course, he's the play caller and the head coach.
Yeah.
It's a very West Wing mentality to be like, okay, who's the person we're going to blame? Like, there's lots of blame to be had.
I feel like John and Bridget are saying, hang them all. And I don't like
I'm
that.
Saying hang well, no I'm a man one. Of peace. John I'm a man of peace. I'm saying hang no one. Everyone has some culpability and everyone can improve. Not just that.
People... I think the general idea is that Zach is in over his head because he's still a fourth-year head coach who's trying to call plays, and he's got too much, I guess, food on his plate to handle all these responsibilities. And that's still like the general narrative with it. And I understand that because he does have the title of play caller. But this is not all on him in the sense that not all these responsibilities are falling on him. The guy that people want to replace Taylor with his play caller, Brian Callahan, everyone I've talked to about this situation has told me that his primary, like the majority of his influence is in the red zone. The red zone is exactly what people are talking about their ineptitude last night. So are we saying that the answer is to give every single iota of play calling responsibility to the guy whose responsibility for the red zone?
I wasn't sure if you said this or someone else, that maybe there's just too many cooks in the kitchen.
So it's to give Zach Taylor complete autonomy with the playbook then?
Or Joe Burrow.
No,
Joe Burrow is a player. Look, you can't do that. You can't put that on his. That's too much.
He's not Peyton Manning.
John,
even Peyton, could he really do that?
Peyton couldn't do it in the third year, anyways.
John,
yeah.
What? Look at this. So it's third down and eight, and look at what we have dialed up.
Matchups all the way across. This comes from the edge as well. Burrow protected, gets it out to his tight end Hayden Hurst, the former Raider.
So
what is that?
This is what Burrow is talking about when he says, "I have no real options downfield." What
we didn't see downfield. I mean, we couldn't see what was happening downfield.
Yeah. Well, we don't have the Alt 22 or whatever, the alt-right version of the game, whatever it's called. John?
Can't afford.
All that I'm saying is that every time we have the discussion about Zach Taylor as a crappy play caller and he should give up responsibilities, there is no solid answer here aside from just changing for the sake of change. And I get Bengals fans went through that 4 or 5 years ago when they wanted to fire Marvin Lewis, right? And they eventually did that and they brought in an institute of culture change. There is no quick or positive solution to Zach Taylor giving up the title of play caller because even if he does, the collaboration process between all the coaches, the quarterback's coach, the offensive coordinator, the head coach, that still exists. It's just a different person with that title. The plays don't actually change. The plan needs to change. And the plan doesn't change if just the title changes.
So what about the pass blocking schemes like this? What happened on this sack? See here, you have, if you look at my lines I'm drawing, you have this guy coming around here and he sacks him, right? But what you should have had, I think
was Lyle Collins involved in that? Because that man, honestly,
when
I watch Lyle Collins play, I love everybody. I'm a man of peace and love. I feel like I could do a better job than Lyle Collins.
John, I think it might have been, I don't remember. It was maybe our friend Parker Blake or Mike Santagato or Matt Menich. I don't remember. But one of them said basically on that play, the tackles need to realize that they have to come a little bit more inside so that the guards can pick up the free man.
Let me tell you.
Both edges were showing blitz or showing rush.
And then they backed out. And so then the tackles have to adjust. Yeah.
Okay. Let me just make a comment. If you have any doubt that our offensive line is not standing in the right place and not also making sure that the defense is in the right place, why in the world would Burrow throw the ball against someone's arm three times in one game? Something is wrong. People are either too close to his arm or his line of vision. It is not normal for a QB as good and as talented as Joe Burrow to throw the ball and have it boink off someone else's arm. Someone is too close to him in his line of vision. I think maybe I couldn't figure it out. I watched the plays over and over again. I couldn't figure out why that happened. It happened twice in a row, then it happened later in the game.
Say boink again.
Wasn't it Lyle Collins?
You should do sound design for the NFL.
Thank you.
Wasn't it Lyle Collins giving up the pressure on those?
By the way, Lyle, if you're watching the show, you are always welcome here. We're a fan of you and everyone else. I think he should be fired. I think that Lyle Collins must be fired from the Cincinnati Bengals today, not tomorrow, replaced with a rookie or anybody else.
Okay.
What was our guest's name last week?
Parker Blake.
Parker. So now I feel like he has totally changed my mindset. And I feel like, what did he say? Like, you got to play with your feet, not your body. Lyle in particular did not look like he was playing with his feet. He looked,
We were talking about the size of the butts of the players, right? And you were saying that certain.
I think that was a couple
butts.
Weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
But you can see that they're. I don't know. They were just playing a little sloppy.
Yeah. He was saying. Play. He was saying they were playing. You're right. He was saying they were playing with their heads, or they should play with their feet and not with their heads.
So I was because they're leaning in. I was watching their feet, and I was like, oh, they're not they're not like standing firm. It just didn't feel dynamic. So they need to hire Parker.
They got to get so Quentin Tarantino in there.
There was a cup. Well, he's in the happiest place in the world. He's in Utah, which I don't know how that works. If you have to pay an annual, you know, pass, or you get, but he's there in Utah, happiest place in the world. But look, let me just say,
he's talking about Parker Blake, by the way. For those who don't know, our guest from last week, Parker Blake, lives in Utah. John, Utah has been called the happiest place in the world.
John, why? There were a couple of plays, big plays. It seems to me that whenever the offensive line held up, now I know everybody's like, oh, that was only 2 seconds. That was only, you know. And I know that maybe sometimes they technically held up other, you know, a little bit more or the same amount. But I know a clean pocket when I see it.
Yeah.
And a clean pocket, you know, different things get called a clean pocket. But a pocket that the passer can comfortably sit back and throw, even if it's just 2 seconds, but enough focus, you know, nothing in his vision, is what I call a clean pocket. And there was a couple of cases of that. So let's look at the Hayden Hurst touchdown.
Friendly words back and forth. Burrow throws over the middle. It's caught by the former Raven, Hayden Hurst.
I mean, and, well, first of all, look at that pass. And second of all, look at that hustle by Hurst. Hurst is turning out to be one of my favorites.
But it's just, that, you know, when delicious. I see that, when I see that, John, it's weird. It reminds me of an Andy Dalton touchdown, because Andy Dalton, his big plays usually just came when the pocket was almost perfect, you know? And you have Joe Burrow just hanging out and waiting for the opportunity. Then he strikes. And it's very nice to see. It's very refreshing. I hadn't seen it in his first 2 years, you know, early in this season either.
Look, Joe Burrow has been told by someone, I don't know who, to throw on the run less, to maneuver out of the pocket less.
He has the chance to. Let's look at the Mike Thomas long game too.
Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins have not been targeted yet tonight. Burrow throws. It's complete. It's Mike Thomas with the catch. And on the run is Thomas.
So that's another pretty standard play, right, for most teams. But for the Bengals, John, correct me if I'm wrong, that is something new that we're seeing, where they're holding up and letting him go through his progressions. And he's hitting his fourth, fifth options on those plays.
I think the protection's been fine for the past few weeks. It's not what's been holding the offense back. With that one, it seemed like the Ravens were playing really off, and I think they just ran like a bunch of deep hitches. So Thomas just had a clean area to catch the ball and turn up the field. Good play by him.
You know, the Ravens were playing a zone, is what the announcers were saying. Chris Collinsworth was saying, and he said they were not usually playing a zone. Now, I don't know what that means, but they won.
They were, yeah. I mean, the whole field is the play zone, if that's what you mean.
No, I think play zone. But no, seriously, I'm with you guys. I don't know quite what the problem is, but I do know that, you know, Joe Burrow is not the kind of guy that you're going to expect, to do things that a very mobile QB will do. He is mid-mobile. He's not very mobile.
I don't think, no, I disagree. He needs to
sit back and jump.
There's different types of mobile. And Joe Burrow is like, I don't know, John, before he was drafted, you know, you said Tony Romo. A lot of people said Tony Romo. I can see that. But, you know, even maybe a John Elway, you know, I mean, not a big John Elway fan, but John Elway, the way that he was mobile, you know, to free up the kind of, it's different than Lamar Jackson. It's like you're worried he's going to run for 30 yards. And when he gets out of the pocket and he starts like flying around, that changes how the defense, you know, plays the receivers. That's not with Joe Burrow. But Joe Burrow, let's say like Aaron Rodgers, a more recent guy, right?
Where he's not an Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is more mobile than Joe Burrow.
And kind of improvise. Anyways, the point is that
Aaron Rodgers has great awareness of everything that's around him. Aaron Rodgers, he doesn't. Joe Burrow doesn't.
Hair coming out of that hat.
John.
Look, Joe Burrow, this is my...
You've got to cover the Saints before John...
No, I got to say one thing. I just got to respond to you, Daddy. Because I think that's the misconception, is that Joe Burrow is an Aaron Rodgers. He's not. He doesn't have that kind of awareness.
I agree.
When Aaron Rodgers, when someone's behind him, he knows someone's behind him. When someone's to the left of him, he knows someone's to the left of him. And he can throw the ball in those situations because he knows everything that's around him. I've never seen him boink the ball off of someone's hand.
Okay.
I love Joe Burrow. I love Joe Burrow. He just had But Joe Burrow needs the clean pockets.
Touchdown broken
he needs
up.
His pockets cleaned.
No. Joe Burrow, for some reason, is not seeing what he wants to see down the field, as John said, in the first and second downs.
No one sees
there's
that.
There's not the opportunities in terms of whatever it is, play calling or...
That's an excuse.
He's not seeing it.
No one sees it. This is the
NFL. It's not an excuse, Hoji. It's just what it is.
Yeah. Okay. Agree to disagree. So we'll move on to the Saints.
That was beautifully established.
No, I mean, I don't think anyone's coping like Burrow right now. He's not playing well. Like, it falls on him,
okay,
too.
No. I didn't that's what I'm saying. Okay, let us move on. Let us move on and talk about the New Orleans Saints, who are going to play the Cincinnati Bengals. And fun fact, Joe Burrow played his college football in the same state. John, what else do you know about this game?
And that's defense. A low bar, John.
Yeah. You really set me up well there. Saints have Andy Dalton, a quarterback. They're going to play him potentially for the third year in a row.
He always beats us, too.
They have Taysom Hill, who doesn't have a position. He just ends up getting the ball from time to time. Kind of feels like he's made Dalton a cuckold a little bit. I don't know. It feels like a lot of the Saints' offense right now is because of Taysom Hill, but Andy Dalton still gets to get those victory formation kneel downs. I don't know. Feels a little weird to me. Defense is still okay, I think. Cameron Jordan is still a really good edge, but Marcus Lattimore, who's their best cornerback, he's getting torched on a weekly basis. Justin Jefferson had the best of him last week. Geno Smith dropped 32 on him. He might be the best quarterback in the league now. So I don't think the Saints' defense is as good as they probably should have been entering the season, but I think playing in that stadium again, though, the Superdome, which is where Burrow and Chase played their last game at LSU. You know what I'll say right now? Chase goes off for 150 yards in the Superdome with Burrow. They get some type of magic there. You know, they start smelling that cigar smell that they all smoked in the locker room after the LSU national title game. I'm sensing like some nostalgia is going to come back to them.
That's your prediction.
What's your final score?
It is my prediction. My final score? Screw it. Bengals win 28-17.
So I'll go next. Okay, you're going to think I'm crazy, but Dalton is a man of God, right? And there is no vengeance like the vengeance of a man of God. I think the Saints win it. And I think it's going to be ugly. I think it's going to be a low point for the Cincinnati Bengals. We will lose. We will lose horribly. It will be 10-39. Daddy, you're muted.
You literally silenced Daddy.
Bridget.
Yeah, so now the jinx is up, right? I said we'd lose, and we lost. So I had been 0-4, or 4-0, depending on how you go with it. I love this team, and I love the Bengals, and I am Houdé Nation all the way. I am going to be a little bit closer to Hoji. I think what I saw, we are in a momentum team. I've said that for a lot of years. Regardless of the culture change, we're still a momentum team. I think we are not going to have the momentum we need coming out of this Sunday night. I think it's going to be... See, I would go 21-17, but I would say it in favor of the Saints. Yeah. But I will be in New Orleans, so if anyone is there, come find me and tell me why you think otherwise.
I'm sorry that we have to agree on this. Yeah,
yeah.
I something about Joe Burrow. He looks tired. He looks stressed. He looks like he's sick of the game. It's not the Joe Burrow we saw last year.
Did you see the bags under his eyes on the close up? Like he looked tired.
He seems something is off with the young man. He does not look like his cheery. He looks, you know, he doesn't look like the Home Alone kid anymore.
I mean, look, I will agree with you guys, honestly, with Bridget and Hoji, that I feel like Joe Burrow, he would feel sick to his stomach after the game. It is going to be one of those games where he's just gonna feel sick. And I think final score will be 45-13 Bengals, and the play of the game will be Joe Burrow, who has six touchdowns this week. So,
so how is he sick? What do you mean by sick then? What did you?
He's gonna be sick of winning. You know, you're gonna win so much that
you're sick of it. Yes, we all know the famous quote.
Yeah,
you fascist.
But look, if you are sick of this podcast, good news, we are done talking, and you can subscribe and leave 5-star review and leave money if you go to the different Patreon.
Smash the like button. And put a comment in the comment section. Hey, I would like to know who should hang.
We had -4 subscribers last month. That is fascinating because we had thousands of views and people are unsubscribing. Like, if it is crazy that nobody subscribes to our show, it is free. I don't know how to tell you the subscription. Maybe I talk too much about money. The subscription is free initially, and so just subscribe to our YouTube channel and do that. If you don't do that, Hoji is going to use some of that, whatever that magic he was talking about with the wrath of God or whatever. He's going to get Andy Dalton to do that.
I don't think he's using magic. I think he's going with his bare hands. He's hanging people now. Like, he's on a violent spree.
Yeah.
He is.
Should we do something about this?
It's a language thing. That's in Village Island, that's how we speak about it. When you want to say blame, we say hang or behead.
So there you go.
Yeah, but I really would like for you to know in the comments, is it the coaching? Is it the Burrow? Is it what? Is it the offensive line? Is it Lyle Collins? Who is it that
is
we blame?
Is it a lack of DJ Reader?
Is it the lack of DJ Reader?
Lots
DJ,
of things.
Lack of T.K. Higgins. What's going on?
Okay, so what is going on? And with that, we will end the show. So thank you very much for listening. I'm Daddy McDuke. I'm joined by Dr. Hoji Lekirgismoji and the other two, John Brian Sheeran and Bridget the HR Gentiles. And so subscribe, like, share, leave comments, do all that kind of stuff. Go follow John's stuff on City Jungle and follow all of the rest of the gang on Twitter. We'll see you next time. So long. Sweetie.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.